It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. With a death wish, be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
All right, we'll do our misery index after this. Eric wants to join us. Let's welcome Eric to the show. What's up, Eric?
Hey, Dale and Sean. Yeah, don't you think the Aggies should be ahead of the Longhorns in the rankings right now? I think they had more impressive wins than a San Jose State and UTEP. And also, I think Miami should be number two, not number four. And I heard Molly Kierum is leaving ESPN First Take to do OnlyFans. Is there any truth to that?
I didn't hear that.
I'll hang up and listen.
He had me in the first half. I was like, oh, look at Eric. a serious thing when he's talking about a woman. And then he did what he did. There's no evidence to suggest that Molly Kierum left First Take in ESPN for OnlyFans. She did leave abruptly. I think, she was there on Monday and then not on Tuesday? Did she show up for the Monday show? I don't remember, but I know she wasn't there on Tuesday. I don't know. Yeah, well, I'm asking you, you were keeping track. I don't know. I don't know if she was there for Monday, but I know she wasn't there afterwards. Apparently, it was uncomfortable. Stephen A. Smith said it was uncomfortable. He's uncomfortable talking about it. He said that the contract was offered. She didn't want it. He did it on his own platform, not ESPN, talking about it. But she's gone. Not for OnlyFans. Don't know what she's going to do next. That's, Eric, you dreaming. Maybe you're just projecting what you'd like to see happen. But I don't believe that's the case. As far as the rankings, well, that leads us into the misery index. As far as A&M over Texas, if you just go by resume, then yeah.
Yeah.
Although, if you're a Texas fan, whatever, you beat an 0-2 football team. But if you want to play that game.
I mean.
If you want to play that game.
Or you think Notre Dame should be ranked. Choices, red pill, blue pill. Choices, yeah,
well,
yours.
They are ranked in the AP.
They are still ranked.
24.
I'm like, if you're gonna rank them, put them at 20th. What's the difference? At they actually did play two close games against two teams that appear
now
to be
in
good.
The top 10. Yeah. So if you think,
what's Mizzou done?
Yeah, nothing. Just look impressive, they beat Kansas, and Kansas should be okay, but. Yes, you make a point. If you're going to keep them ranked,
they should be 16th.
Why are they being dropped? Because they had the toughest schedule in the country to start.
Yeah.
Yeah, that far. We'll keep them in the
poll.
Well,
if you don't think they should be ranked, that's fine.
Then drop them out.
Yeah. That's
probably how it works because, it's not one person doing it. So some people thought they probably should have been higher than 24.
Yeah.
Other people didn't rank them at all and that, and it all washes out to them being 24.
So I'm in the camp of they should be ranked. Because
if you thought they're the 8th, or whatever they start at, top 6 or whatever in the country, and they lose a game by 3 on the road to what?
Number 4.
To number 4 currently, and then to number 10
by
1, and it happened on fourth down, right?
Fourth down after their holder didn't hold an extra point.
Yeah.
These are very thin margins of these losses.
This is a whole conversation because they started in a certain point, but then you want to make it about resume when the rankings initially are about what you believe them to be. If you believe them to still be a good football team and they just couldn't get it done against two other good football teams, you don't really think, and once again, got to make the caveat that this is a group of people.
Yeah.
It just comes out this way. But does anyone believe Notre Dame, who ranked them outside the poll, do they believe they're not one of the best 25 teams in the country? Probably not. They just went off a resume. And, of course, quality losses will probably be the way Notre Dame gets in if they rip off 10 straight.
Yeah, and if they win two games and they're 2-2, everyone's going to have a rank.
Yeah, they'll be ranked again. That's
And their two wins can be – I actually –
against Purdue. They got Purdue and then whoever
Arkansas?
Else is next. Yeah.
I forgot if it's Arkansas or Boise State.
I think it's Purdue and then they got to go to Arkansas.
Okay.
I think that's
so then
the case.
They'll be ranked.
Yeah, so
– they'll be 12th again.
So as far as the rest of Eric's stuff – should A&M be ranked out of Texas? If you go by who they beat, yes.
It's very good that Georgia-Tennessee was happening at the same time as Texas.
Oh, people caught wind of what Arch was up to.
No, but the AP voters.
Well, they were busy watching other games.
Yeah, the AP voters are busy.
Yeah.
They didn't get eyes on it.
That's true. They only have limited eyes and limited time to watch things. Unlike the rest of us, we can have the multi-view going, I guess.
Yeah.
And we can see or look at stats. Woof. What is he? What's going on over there?
Someone on Twitter was like, this is where Texas really misses the Longhorn Network. Like, in past years, no one would have been able to watch this.
That game would have been stuck on the Longhorn Network and
boom. Never happened.
Like, the stats would have been bad when you see them in a box score, but no one would have seen every missed throw, the dirt balls, missing guys in the flat, throwing it 3 yards over the head in the flat. All that stuff probably wouldn't have been hyper-focused.
And Miami and South Florida was in the lightning delay for like most of the...
Yeah, so you could not avoid. If you wanted to just check out what the hell was going on in Austin, you had every reason to. If you wanted to have Georgia and Tennessee on one TV and then watch Arch, maybe just hate watch Arch and Texas do what they do. Look, the Texas defense, great. Unfortunately, the most hyped part of their team, not so much.
Not great.
And we talked about it in passing. You know what? I'm not going to get stuck on Arch again. It's time for the Misery Index. Lazy J will get to you. All right. Texas doesn't make the list for the Misery Index because despite it's miserable watching Arch throw the football, they won.
Yeah, I think in general, you had to lose.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And you could have thrown UCLA and Virginia Tech on the list because of how bad their teams are, but they fired their coach. Those fan bases feel better. They feel like they're one good hire away from turning it all around. Of course, those two programs haven't made good hires recently. So maybe the person in charge is incapable of that. But at least there's blind hope that you hit on the next coach, you'll be okay. So we won't be putting them on the list. I think number one goes to the team who lost in Atlanta, and it's typified by this response from a simple question. Now, the question was, hey, Dabo, do you regret maybe a couple of offensive plays from your loss to Georgia Tech? That led to a 13-minute rant. Here's just a bit of it. Dabo on his team and really his status right now.
If they want me gone, if they tired of winning, they can send me on the way because that's all we've done is win. So if they tired of winning, we've won this league 8 out of the last 10 years. Is that not good? I'm just asking, is that good? I don't know if that's good or not. To win your league 8 out of 10 years, to go to the playoffs 7 out of 10 years, to be in 4 national championships, win it twice. Yeah, we're a little down right now. Take your shots, but I got a long memory in case y'all don't know. We'll be all right. We'll bounce back. This is a program built to last, always has been, always will be. And I would just say if you give up on us, if you don't believe on us because we've lost two games down to the last straight and we're one, you didn't believe in us anyway, so it don't matter. You weren't all in anyway. If you're all in, you burn the ships, man. There ain't no exit strategy. Like, you're freaking all in. And hey, listen, I mean, if Clemson's tired of winning, they send me on my way, but I'm going to go somewhere else and coach. I ain't going to the beach. Hell, I'm 55. I got a long way to go. Y'all going to have to deal with me for a while. I got a long way to go. I'm just getting going. I'm just now good enough to be a head coach.
Excuse me, sir. I just work for Clemson 24/7. I don't want to burn any boats. I just cover the team. My name's Austin Hannon. I just cover the team. Why do I have to burn boats? That's a clear attempt to deflect. And Dabo has something to say. It didn't matter what the questions were. He was going to say it. No one said you're getting fired. No one thinks you're getting fired. It's just the guy asked about, or maybe it was a woman. I don't know who asked. Asked about a couple plays in a close ball game where your offense, which was supposed to be pretty good because according to ESPN, you had the fourth best player in the country at quarterback, kind of failed in big situations. Yeah, you had a couple explosive plays, but for the most part, the Clemson offense has been disappointing. What the hell is he talking about other than it's just, you know, like, I'm going to take over this presser, and if anyone thinks I'm not good and wants me out, go ahead. I'll be a problem for you down the stretch, or I'll be a problem for you at some point else.
Yeah.
Clemson's not firing you, Dabo. You won two national titles. Look, it's easy to forget what they were before you got there, but cooler heads will prevail, and you can write your own exit. They're not firing you. He's just yelling, or not yelling. He's just ranting for no reason.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's feeling it from the fan base, because the fan base will get upset because their expectations were pretty high because he won at a level that would make expectations high.
They're a top five team to start.
And he sold it as this being a really good team. Part of it is your fault if you're complaining about people not turning on you. You sold it as a really good team. You were talking in the offseason about Clemson being the first team to go 16-0. Now look at you. Can barely beat Troy.
That is tough. Also, has any moment in history had as much of a stranglehold on football coaches as Hernan Cortez burning the boats when he landed in Mexico?
Yeah, I don't know if that should be a point in history they should be highlighting.
No, but they love it.
Yeah.
They love it because of the mentality.
Yeah.
Although it's like they could just have the new slave labor they just found. They could just have them build the boats. He did go back to Spain at one point.
At a time, what did people consider college football players when it came
to... Some people made the comparison.
Yes, at a time. Yeah, I don't... Burn the boats.
Yeah, everyone loves burning the boats.
Yeah, the Heat do it too. when they gotta let everyone know it's us against the world, just do us against the world, Dabo. You can do that.
Yeah,
you don't have to just burn the boats. Hey, I like that boat. I don't want to burn it. Then I got to rebuild it. I don't want to do that.
I think it's that and 300. Just the movie 300. Not even the actual, like story.
Yeah.
Just the movie.
Yeah, because how many people know that was actually... Well, it's been bastardized because you got to make a movie, but it's a real event.
Yeah.
Okay. Dabo number one. Look, if you want to fire me, fire me. Clemson AD's like, what?
No, I don't.
When did I ever say that?
That buyout.
Yeah, true, that too. Then I got to pay you to go, then pay someone else to come in?
Hold on, I'll be the non-Clemson fan to Google search Dabo Swinney buyout.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm sure they all know. I'm sure they all have it in their hip pocket anytime they lose. they can think of it. How much would it cost?
And they're all Googling it at 3 o'clock last... $60 million?
Yeah.
No thanks.
Not going to
You know what, Dabo? You bring up some good points.
You know what? Going 9-4 ain't so bad. We're fine with that. I got to go Notre Dame number two. Notre Dame, I think, as far as prominent teams who drop games, number two. 0-2. You lose because your backup quarterback misses a hold, and it's not just him. That was the defining moment as far as their end-of-game situation, and NBC wasn't going to let you forget it. They put Tyler Buckner's face on that television.
Yeah.
More than Marcus Freeman late in that game.
Put some of those cornerbacks on national TV.
Put that linebacker on national TV. Show his face after he let that blocking tight end catch a touchdown on fourth down. Or put the ref on national TV after he didn't call that holding. I mean, I ain't got no love lost to Notre Dame, but that was a hold that A&M got away with. But credit to A&M for doing something Dabo didn't do. Go into the transfer portal and go get yourself some receivers. And despite Marshall Reed being inaccurate, when he hit big. A lot of explosive plays for A&M. They get the win. But Notre Dame, 0-2. They got a win out. The schedule isn't great. And because their defense is in shambles, it looks like, nothing's guaranteed. Like before the year, even if they split between Miami and A&M, you think they would go into Arkansas and win. You saw what Taylen Green did, who is a bigger, at least to this point, more accurate, just as explosive in scrambles as Marcell Reed. That guy that they got to defend in a couple weeks is a problem. I expect them to beat Purdue. You expect it to happen. So Boise State's on schedule, as you mentioned. They don't look as good as we thought. Of course, USC down the line. So, Notre Dame's got a road where it's not too difficult if you think they're as good as their preseason ranking.
Yeah.
But if all these flaws that have popped up through the first 2 weeks are real and not just a product of playing two really good teams, it's going to be tough for them, and they assume playoffs this year after making the national title game. So that fan base, mostly because they're so shocked at how the things went.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty miserable, judging by the podcast I've listened to the last couple weeks. Pretty miserable when it comes to Notre Dame people. My hate listening stretched into this week after their loss to A&M. They're pretty miserable about their team right now.
Yeah, I think that when you go into the season, you're thinking, like, okay, 1-1. Like, that's like what the level-headed Irish fan is like. We can just do 1-1.
Certainly a lot of them are like, we'll go 2-0.
Yeah. 2-0 is what you know, if you're drinking the gold-colored Kool-Aid.
Sure.
It's a weird thing to
I don't know if
visualize.
I would drink gold colored yeah. Kool-Aid, to be honest. Looks like something else, honestly.
But
you're not well hydrated.
No. Let's break out the Tom Herman chart.
Yeah.
I think that, it's now when you go 0-2 and it's like, oh, but if they win 10 straight, they can make the playoffs. Like, can they win 10 straight? Like, are they that good that you can pencil them in to win 10 straight? There's basically no team in college football that I'm like, yeah, they'll just win 10 straight. Just real quick, just to get that off. And like we said, they're manageable games, but they're manageable games against pretty good teams that it's a double-edged sword. The schedule is good enough to where if they do win them all, they can actually make the playoffs still. However, it is good enough to where they might not win them all. Yeah. And so they have such a small margin of victory now that you got to be – I mean, it's September 17th, and you're like – there's a good chance we don't make the playoff.
Kind of like the team in town.
Yeah.
Not the Cougs. They keep winning.
No, their destiny's in their own hands.
Yeah, the Texans, on the other hand.
Beat Texas Tech in a few weeks.
Got a must-win in week three for the Texans if we go by history when it comes to making the playoffs. Next, I was going back and forth between two SEC schools. We've had this talk before. If you're a Florida fan, you feel like, well, yeah, we lost, but let him drop one more, and let's guarantee he's out the door. We can move on, much like what's – so they'll feel better probably pretty quickly. They want to beat Miami. That's their next game. But you know what? A loss wouldn't be so bad, I think, particularly if they're out on Napier. A Miami win might save them. So I'm not going to put them at three. Tennessee, you're at three. You thought you finally got them.
Yeah.
You're up 21-7. Your offense finally breaks the 17-point barrier with Kirby Smart on the other side. Joey Aguilar, you're singing his praises because Nico couldn't do this. And then Georgia found a way to shut you down in the middle part of the game. Like from the second quarter to the third quarter on, Georgia had answered. And then Tennessee got it going in the fourth quarter. But you're up by eight late. Was that fourth down, the Landon Humphreys touchdown?
Yeah, it was on fourth and eight. Or
you make that. You make that stop, game is likely over. And then you give up the two-point conversion, tie. Of course, you come down the field.
If you make the field goal, the game's
you win
over.
The field goal kicker after, I don't know if it's hindsight, but because everyone say, well, I saw him. I knew he was going to make it. I don't know if that was their real thought, but people looked at his facial expressions on the sideline. And then afterwards, he clearly missed, like, well, he was never going to make that kick. He did come back and make a kick in overtime, but then the Tennessee defense couldn't stop Georgia from scoring a touchdown. So that was, Heupel's been to an Orange Bowl. I think it was it the COVID year he's been to, or maybe not, maybe the year after he had Hendon Hooker, or was it Joe Milton? I forgot who. Maybe he filled in for Hendon Hooker. Whatever he beat Clemson, I think, in an Orange Bowl.
That was the Hendon Hooker year, but
Joe Milton
he
played.
Destroyed his leg.
Oh, yeah.
The last
and Joe Milton
2 weeks
played in that one, yeah. And people thought, hey, look at Joe Milton, he's going to be the next
show
big thing.
Goes on.
Turns out not the next big thing, although he is now an NFL player. So they have made an Orange Bowl before, but. Winning on Saturday is that breakthrough win. You beat Kirby, you beat Georgia, you beat the SEC favorite coming in. Well, Texas and Georgia SEC favorites, and you had them at home. You had them, and you let it slip through your fingers. So Tennessee, still in the same spot they were coming into the year. Think they're going to be pretty good, but how good can they be in the SEC? And considering the lack of quarterback play in the SEC, having a competent one like Joey Aguilar puts you in a place where, despite the loss.
Yeah,
you should be considered at least a threat to get to Atlanta.
Yeah, they have at least the guys put up the best numbers and not just beating tomato cans, which normally the Tennessee offense wins rolling. That's what they do is they just put up crazy numbers against terrible teams. They did it against Georgia for the first time and to come away with the loss. Yeah, it's like it's got it. That's why I appreciate this being above Florida, because Florida, you always got in the back pocket of like that. Fire this guy. Fire Sunbelt Billy. Get a real coach in here.
Exactly.
This is like, oh, we actually were going to beat a team we haven't beaten since 2016. And again, stop them on fourth down. You're going to win. If you stop the two-point conversion, there's a good chance you win. If you make the field goal, you win. And all that goes against you. And you eventually lose to, these guys again, really? So, yeah, I think Tennessee's definitely up there as far as misery.
So, with the caveats of Florida likely on the verge of getting rid of their coach, just add a couple more losses. I'm going to not even use them. I'm going to stick in the SEC, though. How bad does it feel to be South Carolina? You lose your starting quarterback, and you watch Vanderbilt break you in your own building. Like, they've done it the last couple weeks. They did it to Virginia Tech after being down at the half.
Yeah.
But Vanderbilt has an offense that, if you're not sound, they'll rip off runs. Diego Pavia will pull it. He'll go for 5 to 10 yards. And, of course, they'll test you deep with their deep ball. You watch a quarterback get knocked out of a game in a season where you thought you had a real shot because Lenore Sellers was supposed to be one of those guys. Like, he's not out for the year. But you dropped that game, and you weren't even playing well offensively while he was in there. And then you got to watch Luke Doty play quarterback for you. I can't believe that guy. Look, Luke Doty, fine story. But Shane Beamer, you know what Luke Doty provides. You got to find a better backup. I don't know if you do it in the portal, but you got to find a better backup than Luke Doty. Because it was only 14-7 when he got knocked out of that game. And at that point, you had no shot. The air came out of the building, and Luke Doty was dirt and balls. It's got some arch in him. And
hey, Paul Feinbaum, see that?
I don't think Paul Feinbaum is going to compare Luke Doty to great quarterbacks in college football recent history. But South Carolina, you haven't really looked great all year, and the Virginia Tech win gets worse and worse as they got their ass kicked by Old Dominion. And then you drop a game to Vanderbilt where they dominate you over the entire game. Some real questions about the projections for South Carolina this year, and what happened on Saturday night with their quarterback doesn't help. And they got Missouri coming up, a team who's actually played pretty well. So I'm sure there are other fan bases that are miserable, but I think the Vanderbilt name still makes people think, oh, we got this.
Yeah.
And you don't have it anymore against Vanderbilt. You don't roll your helmet out and beat Vanderbilt anymore. At least not if you're South Carolina or Virginia Tech.
I was going to say, like, South Carolina, it's a little bit of like, is Vandy just like better than us?
They might just be better.
Are they better?
Which shouldn't be how you feel at South Carolina, despite being a, you would say, low second tier team in the SEC. Like, you're a top 20, you can be a top 25 program.
At the end of last year, they're complaining that they didn't make the playoffs.
And now look at you. Now look at you.
Their fan base believed they should have made the playoffs.
Because,
and now they lost to Vanderbilt by a lot.
Because of their hot streak to end the year. Yeah. Now look at you. You thought you were a playoff team. You're bitching and complaining about SMU and Diego Pavia and nameless Vanderbilt. Because the only name anyone knows, maybe the tight end Stowers, maybe people, or Stowers, people know that name. But other than Pavia and maybe Clark Lee, the head coach, no one knows a name on Vanderbilt. And yet, dominating 2 weeks in a row, much to my chagrin, because it means I got to deal with Keith for the entire year, it feels like, until they drop 3 games, which, not a guarantee anymore, certainly when you get through South Carolina. All right, you wait, Lazy J. You called in, sorry, unfortunately, at the wrong time, because we do our misery index on it could be Tuesday, but we did it today. Anthony, Reggie, we'll get to all of you when we come back. If you want to follow them, 713-780-3776. We'll get through this break and get to you guys when we get back.
Loaded, ready to rule. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
All right, welcome back. Let's get to the callers. Reggie, Anthony, I see you. We'll get to you, but let's get to Lazy J first. What's up, Lazy J?
Yo, Del, what's up, my brother?
What's up?
Yeah, I had two questions. First one, I called in the other day. You said you want to talk to me. What was LaRocca saying about the listening party?
He said you were being a bit of a baby. Those are his words.
Oh, because y'all had like a minority count on how many free tickets I could get to minority.
He said you aren't around, and when people call you out on things, you don't want to be around to answer to those call outs. He had some words for you. That's all.
He just got mad because I kicked him out of my quads on COD. I was carrying his ass every game.
Okay.
So, but now I want to talk about some NFL, man. What you think about Miami? You think if they go 0-4, I see y'all losing to Buffalo this week. If y'all lose to the Jets, do y'all think that y'all blowing it up? I know everybody's talking about Tyreek Hill and maybe Jalen Waddle getting traded. But what do you think on the defense side of the ball? I mean, the Cowboys, I think they would be a good fit for maybe Minkah Fitzpatrick at safety or maybe Bradley Chubb. What do you think? What's your thoughts on that? Love the show.
I think as far as the Dolphins, yeah, 0-3 is very likely. For whatever reason, they play Buffalo pretty well up there. I think two of the last three games have come down to a final kick or something like that up in Buffalo. So it may be more competitive than we think, but they're likely going to go down. If they go to 0-4, they'll have 11 days, and even if they lose to Buffalo, it'll be set as line in the sand, final stand for the Dolphins, welcoming a not very good Jets team. You got to win that one or people will go. That's how the narrative will be. Whether that is what Steven Ross, the owner, is going to do, who knows? If he would fire a coach after 4 weeks, who knows? But as far as guys who may go, I haven't really thought about Minkah because he just got there. But if they want to get off a salary and they think, and the team thinks Minkah can help, if they can get a day two pick for Minkah, I think that's certainly something to consider. Of course, Tyreek is the one that everyone thinks will go. He is probably the hardest guy to trade for his off-the-field stuff and, this, of course, the contract situation, which now the Dolphins, I think, have paid some bonus. It's a little less for a team to acquire him. But there's the balance of how much will it cost us to get him as far as assets. Are we willing to take on a guy who the NFL has said they're going to investigate as far as the latest in his, I won't call it a dispute, but he is in divorce proceedings with his soon-to-be ex-wife. She has accused him of things. The police haven't charged him with anything, but I believe the NFL has said they're going to investigate this. And generally with these investigations, if the party who is making the allegations complies with the NFL, they got something to go on. If she decides she does not want to talk to them, then there's not much to go on. The NFL would just have to go on what is in the court documents. So that is something for another team to consider when they think about acquiring Tyreek Hill. Maybe Bradley Chubb is a guy people want. That's a high salary guy, but I think he's had a couple of sacks in his first two games coming back from an injury. So if you need a pass rusher, that may be someone who's available. And with their general manager, that's a guy who may get fired as well at the end of the season. So it's all these questions, because if you fire are you going to allow the general manager to make decisions on trading guys away when you're going to likely fire him if the season goes really out of hand? Do you want the guys who you don't want to be around to have the power to make decisions? I'm sure it's happened. I don't remember the last time a general manager got fired in the middle of the year. I know it's happened. I just can't remember time. So you get rid of a decision maker or you tell him, because he still has to make moves. Look, your season's going down the drain, but you still got to make roster moves, make decisions that way. So even if you fire the coach, you may still want the guy who is the GM to stay for the year. You just tell him, hey, you come to me. We're not trading him. We're not trading him. You want to pick up a free agent to bolster an offensive line because of a couple of injuries? Go ahead. That's your job. But you're not making any major moves. So a lot of things up in the air. And hell, they beat the Jets. Maybe they think, hey, 1-3. Bengals banged up. The Texans could be 1-2 by the time that game begins. A lot of teams who were in playoff consideration. The Chiefs 0-2. You may think to yourself, despite how you started, that the league is a bit more open because of some questions around the league. So we're talking about days away, 2 weeks or so. But yeah, a lot of that stuff is a possibility, but it's also up in the air as far as what could happen there.
Yeah, and if you're Chris Greer, probably soon to be fired Dolphins GM, if things don't turn around, why am I trading these guys so the next GM gets all these draft picks?
Yeah, let them figure that out.
Trump trade.
Yeah, let them figure that out. I ain't gonna do that. I'm not gonna go out trading these guys and we finish 2-15. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Let the other guy deal with the top five pick. I'm not gonna give that guy maybe the best pick in the draft and more assets. Screw that. Let that other guy handle that.
Yeah, so that's just part of the calculus as well. And yeah, I think before anyone gets traded, I'd be shocked if someone gets traded before Mike McDaniel gets fired. Like, yeah, if they have a big fire sale, it's because they have such a bad record that they probably already fired their coach.
Well, so like clearly 0-3 seems like an almost definitive thing. 1-3, you beat the Jets, who knows what they do. Let's get to Reggie, and then we'll get to Anthony. What's up, Reggie?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
We're good. How are you?
I'm good. There's a couple things I want to say. Last year when the Texans played the Dolphins, I saw on the field when Mike McDaniel was buddying up with the owner and D'Amico Ryan. So I look for him to have some part in the Texans organization sometime soon because of him being originally with the Texans and the camaraderie that they had on that field and right before the game. I thought he was trying to sell himself last year. And another quick thing I want to say, you mentioned Vanderbilt. A lot of people, do you know that the guy Anderson Cooper is part of the Vanderbilt family, one of the richest families in America? A lot of people don't know that, but that's his mother's family, and he's part of that family as well. And I had a question about the fight. Have you guys got an estimated price on that ring that Bud Crawford had before I get to my Texans take?
I have not seen it, but while you ask your questions, you do your text and stuff, I'll look it up and see if there's an actual total on that right now.
That was a gorgeous ring. I mean, all the belts was very impressive, but when that promoter put that ring on his finger, I'm like, man, that is an expensive piece of jewelry. So I'm like, golly.
I got the answer. According to reports, the estimated value is at over $100,000. 10 carats. Of stones set in yellow gold. Apparently, the belt is approximately $188,000, but the ring that you're focused on, over $100,000.
Man, that was very impressive. But my thing with the Texans is they started out the first year of D'Amico Ryan's head coaching career as in 0-2. They ended up 10-7, and his favorite quote is "Iron sharpens iron," which is a direct quote from the Bible. Proverbs 27:17. In order to make iron sharpen iron, it's like with Philadelphia and with the Baltimore Ravens. Those guys are constantly putting players in the game. That game, the Texans was gassed, and it's been that way for a while for the Texans. I don't think they have the adequate people coming in and out of the game because they play their starters entirely too much, and by the time the starters come out the game, the other players don't have that awareness as quick as that to react to the game because you have to be playing a lot of minutes in order for the iron to sharpen the iron. And my prediction is that the Texans need to start playing a lot of their defensive players a lot more, their second-string players a lot more than what they're playing them because those guys are getting gassed. And when you don't have anyone on offense that will open up the field for Nico Collins to get the ball, that's a problem. And the Texans has no tight end. I hate Jordan got hurt again. That was a key loss for them again this year to help that offense move. But my question with you guys is that what do you see the Texans' final record being? Because I still got them going 11-6. I predict that they will go 11-6 despite the two losses. But I think that they'll get it together. And why don't they keep Scruggs at center, which is that's what they drafted him to be, and I hang up and listen.
Well, they have tried with Scruggs. We'll get through what – appreciate the call, Reggie. We'll get to Anthony here as well. They've tried with Scruggs. He was not someone that impressed them in the offseason. We talked about him. Well, the reporting was he was holding the bags for the guys who were the first and second stringers. He wasn't even a guy considered. Like, they had injuries to start the season, and they moved things around, and Scruggs wasn't part of the equation. Patterson got back in there. Hell, they're starting Jake Andrews, who is a guy who they pulled off the street last year. It just looks like Scruggs was a miss, which falls in line with a lot of Nick Caserio's offensive line picks. He's just one of several. Hopefully, Ursary, who's starting at left tackle, is a hit for them. They need one, and they need him to play pretty well. As far as snap distribution, yeah, the Texans.
And I think we touched on that yesterday.
Yeah, we talked about it.
I think part of the reason that they got walked down by Baker, part of it is Baker is that good. And I think another part of it is that they did look tired out there. I mean, we focused mainly on the linebackers that didn't get hardly any rotation. I think they both missed three or four snaps.
Yeah, Toto played 77. Al-Shaair played 77 of the 80 snaps total.
So they both missed three snaps, and it looked like it out there at that last drive.
Yeah, those two guys outside of Kamari Lassiter.
Yeah, outside and, the DBs, they played
the outside of the DBs, those two guys played the most snaps. They actually have a bit of a rotation going with their defensive end unit. Look, of course, Anderson and Hunter played the most snaps, 63 and 60. Hunter had 63, Anderson had 60. Yeah. But
you just naturally have to keep those guys fresh.
They got Derek Barnett in the game. They had some Taylor moments in the game. Dylan Horton played, Horton had the big penalty. Yeah. It was just your linebackers who looked gassed, didn't make plays late. From Toto on Baker when it was 4th and 10 to he and Al-Shaair at the goal line, those two guys didn't have much juice left, and it showed on those final sequences of plays where they couldn't get it done. Will Anderson and Anderson are going to get Hunter and Anderson are going to get the bulk of your snaps at defensive end, and you want that. You want your best players to play a lot. As far as iron sharpening iron, I think that's generally a practice thing. I hear that a lot in practice. Like, we're going to best on best, one-on-ones, and that's how we get the best out of our guys. As far as in-game, I don't know, particularly with the NFL, if you can fill a roster with guys where there isn't so much of a drop-off from first to second that you can give your second stringers 35 snaps or, let's say, 40% of the snaps and still be as effective defensively.
Yeah.
I won't say the Texans are built stars on scrubs. That's what the Rams got because of all their trading away of draft picks and their depth was lacking and they had stars at the top. I won't say it's to that extreme. EJ Speed has started in this league. He only played four snaps. Christian Harris.
Yeah, Speed and Harris. If we're just focusing in on the linebackers, I'm like, should get, and I'm even just saying, 10 more snaps. Yeah. Like, it doesn't even have to be a full-on share.
And I would say some of that has to do with the fact that Al-Shaair and Toto aren't good enough to demand 77 snaps out of the 80.
Exactly.
I don't think they provide so much that the drop-off would be so big. Going to Speed,
it's not Fred
and giving
Warner.
More snaps to Harris. Yeah,
it's not Roquan Smith. It's not Fred Warner. Yes. Like, these guys can be off the field. I mean, you're taking Anderson and
for almost
and Hunter
20
off.
Plays apiece.
Yeah,
you can do that.
And that's different. They're bigger guys, so you do have to give them.
You want them specifically for certain situations.
Give them some plays off, but it is something of like these guys aren't. They're not that good to where it's like we can't live without these
Our
guys.
Our defense falls apart if Al-Shaair and Toto's not on the field.
Rashad White didn't seem to have any problems with those guys on the field.
No, Bucky Irving, same. Hell, Baker made plays breaking free from those guys. Okay, we'll get to Anthony here before we go to break. I said we get to everyone. Let's get to Anthony. What's up, man?
Hey guys, hope your day's going good. So I feel like Bobby Slowick was a little Arterian trying to tell CJ last year, hey, I don't distrust you because you look like a woman. I distrust you because you're not as smart as you think you are. You allow the defensive line to run roughshod over you, which, you know, is hence Joffrey. So now I think CJ and everybody's realizing, like, maybe Bobby Slowick wasn't so bad, which I try to say to all my friends, and then Lance tried to scream to everybody. I think CJ is a little bit too full of himself and thinks he's too smart, kind of like the RG3 syndrome that I call it. It's like you think you can do something, but you really can't, and you just need to be brought on slow. Like, not even Josh Allen came out having full control of the offense. It took Josh Allen about, 4 years to become the dude that he is now? Maybe five? Like, it's a slow process. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, like, you can't just jump out into the water and start swimming left. Like, you gotta learn how to tread water, freestyle, breaststroke, and then eventually you can actually swim, where your parents don't have to worry about you dying. So I think that's what CJ's problem is. Like, shut up. You don't know everything. You're just a young player. Learn from the coaches, and then you'll get good. And then, again, like I said the other day, stop moping all the time. All right, guys, you have a good day.
Thanks, Anthony. Anthony appears to be strongly, I don't know if out completely is on CJ, but what he said, not because you look like a woman. A little disrespectful.
Down the hall. He originally said
he did have the brat hair, so there was a precedent set by Lance Erlein.
NFL Network draft analyst said that.
Yeah, he's not ESPN 975's Lance Erlein when he does stuff like that. Yes. And one of the guys he idolizes, not Lance, but CJ, Tom Brady, he wasn't a fully formed guy early in his career. Tom Brady became the maestro at the line of scrimmage as he continued to learn. Now, he won big early because of that defense and Bill Belichick, but as things kept moving along, Tom Brady became the guy who could assign protections, can do all that. Now, CJ wanted more responsibility. It turns out, through two games, that responsibility hasn't led to more success. I saw Jeremy Branham highlight the throw that CJ made to Nico to start the game and said that's one of the reasons he still believes he's got it. The fact that, beyond what Jeremy said, the fact that we're at a point where people are saying, look, he made a couple throws here, and that means my faith isn't completely eroded, when initially, obviously after year one, it was complete faith, speaks to how once you start to see your quarterback and some of the scars and some of the points that were made during the draft process, while he still went very high, there are questions about him. He wasn't the can't-miss guy that he appeared to be after year one. Those questions are starting to form and solidify for people. It just leads to the questions, and you don't want to have to grade his – you don't want to have to grade the flashes. That's what you do when you say, look at that throw he made to Nico to start the game for a touchdown. That's a flash. You don't want to grade the flashes. Now, that throw's a great throw. You want to be able to say throughout the game, CJ good here, he's good here, he's good here, and then the flashes on top. When we start to judge the quarterback by what he can be because of his flashes, that means his base isn't good enough. And he's a young player. He needs to get better, hopefully. And I said this before the year began. I felt like this year was going to be about the Texans growing into what they can be as opposed to being a finished product early. I think they're more unfinished than even I thought they'd be, unfortunately. And that's why they're 0-2. And all of a sudden, is the season over? Is Reggie's prediction of 11-6 out the door if they lose on Sunday? Yeah. I think if they go 1-3, they're not going 11-6. But we're talking about a full off season of all these changes, of talking about how good they can be. If we go by recent history, the season is done. If they go 0-3, as far as the expectations for what people thought they could be. Look, they can flip that. There's nothing that says guaranteed they go 0-3, then everything's out the window. History just says you go 0-3, you can pretty much pack it up.
Yeah.
We're already at that point.
They did it, I think, in 2018, but it's because they played like a horrendous schedule.
Yeah.
The middle eight game, or no, they won 9 games in a row after that. And Bill O'Brien got mad because he was like, why aren't people more excited than if we won 9 games in a row?
Because we know better.
Yeah. It's because.
And look what happened.
We are familiar with your game, Bill O'Brien.
Yeah. So already we're at maybe a breaking point of the season as far as conventional wisdom when it comes to what you can do if you start 1-2 versus 0-3.
I also think it's even less about being 0-3. It's more like, if your season ends in if Trevor Lawrence and the Jags end your season, all right,
it's a bad look.
you weren't doing anything anyway.
It's a bad look. So we're way over. So Sean will combine. Yeah. So Mike, we will get to you before we go. We heard Anthony talk about the Stroud versus, I guess, Slowick thing, and I did mention some of the differences between Slowick and Kelly early. So last year under Bobby Slowick, I guess this is just over the course of his season compared to Kelly through two games. Their play action rate, the Texans were middle of the league, 16th, 26.5% play action rate. This year, fourth lowest, 15.6. Once again, the caveat, only two games. During snap motion, guys moving as a snap is taking place. The Texans, second lowest. They're very stagnant offensively. And last year, they were, once again, middle of the road. Bobby Slowick, leading into Texans history, just being middle of the road with things. As far as Nico Collins, the prime target, your best offensive player, his intermediate route rate this year, the lowest it's been in the last 3 years. He was upwards of 40-plus in the two Slowick years. Right now, Nico in the intermediate is under 30%. That could be due to the offensive line that they address, maybe not well, and also the game plan when you don't have a actual weapon other than Nico for teams to focus on. Like last year, there was Tank, established Tank. They knew who he was. And of course, Stephon Diggs. The year before was a little different. We didn't know much about who the Texans were and their wide receiver core. Those guys, Tank and Nico, broke through in 2023. in 2025 when it's everyone knows who Nico is, things have changed offensively as far as how they're running, how he is running his routes and the distribution of those routes. So right now, the numbers kind of back up what you're seeing. They're bad offensively, and it's one of the reasons why they're 0-2. Let's get the mic here before we wrap it up. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Dale. Hey, I think the defensive mindset that the Texans have right now is, I don't know. Azeez Alshire has hands like frying pans. That drop interception was horrible. I mean, even you could have glued that to his gloves, and he somehow would have dropped that. Our linebackers are like subpar. They're very. I mean, they're just subpar. Danielle Hunter is on fraud alert. Like, ooh. I think he's a fraud. I don't. I mean, there's not a lot going on over there. I don't know. I don't know. Usually our linebackers are pretty good. Like, we have a decent linebacker core. It just doesn't look like it this year. We made Bucky look like he was, I don't know, throwback Adrian Peterson. It was ridiculous. Anyways, what I was really calling about is, who do I need to talk to at Gal Media to get you a third hour? I'm Rich Eisen. You're making us listen to Rich Eisen now. His old crusty takes. The guy had Frank Caliendo on the other day. We're going back to like 2011 now. Please get a third hour, because I'm tired of Rich. He can stay on Tubi or wherever he was. Please get a third hour. Thanks. Love the show, Dell.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but I got no control over any of that.
Yeah, Dell, work for an extra hour.
No, I'm not working for an extra hour. I'm not working for an extra hour, Sean. I can't. I don't have control over that. I appreciate the kind words, Mike, but it has nothing to do with me why I'm going from 10 to 12. I just do what I'm told. I mean, sure, I seem like a rebel from 7 to 10, but when it comes to actual work, hey, you want to do 10 to 12? Okay, sure. And that's it. I'm not going down the hall. That generally doesn't work for people. I'm certainly not in a position where I can go down the hall and demand anything. I've seen what happens when people do that. They go, oh, okay, we tolerated you before. Now get out of here now that you're causing problems. I'm good 10 to 12, Mike. I appreciate the words, though. As far as Danielle Hunter, he did have a sack, right? He had a sack on Monday night. He put a nice move on one of those guys. Will Anderson leading. Oh, I think he finished second this week in pass rush win rate. He's still doing his job. But unfortunately, you're right about those linebackers. They are subpar at best, and they could not tackle.
Yeah,
it's not a good combo.
Next on the Rich Eisen Show, Kurt Warner joins Rich.
But at least he played football as opposed to did impressions of Madden, Mike's got a problem with.
Hour two, Jonathan Taylor. Hour three, got Andrew Santina.
So another comedian, but also an ex-football player and Hall of Famer and a great running back. Mike, there you go.
Come on.
But before we go, I got to talk about Aqueduct Plumbing Company. Great place to go. I don't run what they do over there. I just know they do a great job. I can't demand anything from them. I can ask you guys to go there if you need a plumbing problem fix. Check out that drop-down service menu. They'll tell you what they do. Big jobs, small jobs, just know it's probably a job you can't handle. Don't make it worse. Get people who will fix it for you before you do real damage. Look, small problems can turn to big problems if you don't know what you're doing. Even a little leak can cause damage to your floors if you don't take care of it. So get it done at Aqueduct Plumbing Company. Call them at 281-488-6238. Or go to the website at aqueductplumbingcompany.com. Get that free price quote. They don't charge you for finding out the problem. That sucks. You don't want to be charged for just figuring out what it is. Aqueductplumbingcompany.com is the website. That's aqueductplumbingcompany.com.